Hey, welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, Jimmy Schubert.
Hey, how are you?
I actually met you in the green room of Flappers Burr Bank.
Yeah, they could probably hear me on one of your earlier podcasts where you were interviewing the very lovely,
Kira Sultanovic.
And funny Kira Sultanovic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, you happened to be there, and I was like, hey, we got to do this. Took a while. We scheduled it out. You had me over your lovely house here. Very nice.
Well, it's just easier for me to do it this way, even though the construction outside is fucking
ridiculous. Yeah, and there was, like, people were coming in and out of the green room while I was doing that podcast, which made it fun, but, you know, it was also a little distracting. So, anyway, let's get down to who is Jimmy Schubert.
That seems to be the $64,000 question.
Now, you grew up in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I grew up in Philadelphia.
Dad was a detective.
I have a large family. I got six brothers, and I got a big extended family. I mean, a lot of the guys I grew up with, like, in those neighborhoods, like, when you grew up with people, I mean, there were a lot of big families traditionally, and if you knew somebody's brother or you hung with somebody's brother, then, you know, you knew their whole family. It was just giant extended families, and so I have a good, solid kind of growing up in a great neighborhood. It was a little... It's Philly, so yeah, as good as Philly could be. But
were you guys playing like manhunt in the streets and stuff like
that?
Yeah,
we play Freedom. Like, we play wire ball.
What's Freedom?
Freedom is Ollie Ollie Upkin Tree. You know, you caught. You know, you got it, and then someone could sneak up on a tree and go Freedom, and then everybody's free. And you got to go catch them again. But those were the nights that you know it's fucking. There was an element of it where you could. You know, it's the summer times. You're playing Freedom. You're playing wire ball. You know, it's kind of. I really felt like I had one of the last traditional American childhoods.
I had a good one. We used to play German Spotlight, you know, where you would have to shine a flashlight in the dark at somebody and then call out their name. And if you were right, then they had to be the, you know, Nazi guard or whatever.
Yeah.
You want to see if any people are hopping the fence trying to get out of your death camp, so.
You know, when it was things were simpler, simpler times. When it was a simpler time when you didn't have to worry about, you know, the guy being next door was a sexual predator or a sexual offender. There weren't all these stories that were dominant. You could, you know, you could literally go out and play outside and do those kinds of things before we moved into this place we're at now, which is fucking really weird with high school shootings and all this other stuff. I mean, peanut allergies and autism.
It seemed like maybe this stuff used to happen too, but the way it's packaged now and presented as a festival of violence, a film festival of violence.
Well, I'm sure some of that stuff was going on, but I'm sure some of that stuff was going on, but not to the degree that it is now. I mean, you know,
is that overpopulation too? Is that what's going on?
I just think it was a different time.
When enough mice get in the same
I think the assassination of President Kennedy started this spiral, started this kind of the end of the innocence of what America represented. You know, like my parents and that generation of folks worked. They were promised if you paid into Social Security, you would get it. They were promised that if you worked in and made America one of the... And they did. I mean, you know, this is obviously, you know, arguably one of the greatest generations. I mean, the fact that they were asked to come and fight in the European front and in the Pacific front in a world war. And, you know, those people come back every bit as fucked up as the guys who are in Iraq and Afghanistan now, but didn't have all the... We didn't have the awareness that we have now about the kind of thing that does to human beings. And, you know, so I just... You know, and it's sad because I mean, you know, I kind of was lucky enough to, I'm old enough to remember all those kind of things, but and see all this kind of new stuff happening. I mean, it's really changed so much in the last 20 years.
Yeah, what's also crazy that not a lot of people know about is like after JFK was assassinated, there was this House committee on assassinations because so many people were getting whacked left, right, and center. They're like, let's form a committee. What's going on here? And they're like, yeah, he was probably a conspiracy. Anyway, but then they never brought out, they're like, oh, these people did it, and then shot him on television. We never got that. Like, there was a coup d'etat, and then there wasn't, like, the, you know, then they were like, yeah, he was probably, you know, probably a conspiracy, and then nobody got done for it, you know?
Yeah, well, that was, you know, that was, I mean, conspiracy theories abound even to this day. I mean, what do you believe? I mean, who knows? I just think that I think the masses are being manipulated by people with a you know, an agenda. And I think it's not easy to manipulate the masses anymore today. I mean, you know, I mean, all you have to do is turn your big screen television and watch that lobotomy that they're pumping into your living room on your big screen television. That you know, I mean, you watch any of these reality shows and you go, you know, to me, it's like, you realize not only should abortion be legal, it should be retroactive. Your parents should have taken care of this fucking 26 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, but...
Anyway, but you grew up with six brothers,
yeah.
Constantly masturbating. You had a police detective dad.
No, I wasn't.
Was he busting you?
Wait a second. Whoa. What's the constantly masturbating thing? I had six brothers. There was no masturbation. It was fucking, you couldn't get a goddamn minute's peace. There was no, you know, it was a very selective thing, you know?
Oh, so you had to, you know, make sure that everybody had a soccer game and your pants were out.
Which was damn near impossible. But no, but my father was a homicide detective, and it was like growing up with Lieutenant Columbo as a roommate. You know what I mean?
You couldn't get away with anything.
Couldn't get away with murder. No, you couldn't get away with anything.
What's the trickiest crime he solved during your childhood where you did something and you're like, how the hell did he figure that out?
No, you know the funny thing? I don't know if it was a tricky crime, but it was a powerful crime. It was a powerful crime. It was about a rape of a woman lawyer. And the only reason they had found her body is because they were investigating a previous rape that happened probably 2 years earlier, and they wound up finding her body by accident, and she was unconscious. She was beaten to a coma. She was admitted to the hospital. And the only thing that kept her alive was that she was clinging to the steam pipe because it was in the dead of winter in Philadelphia in the underground catacombs that are the subway system. And, you know, it was a big deal in the press, and the law firm offered $100,000. They went after the guy and they tried to catch him and stuff. But I the concern that my dad had for the woman who had a child, and the round the clock, you know, perseverance to catch this guy impressed me. The fact that he was doing it before there were databases or DNA. I mean,
right.
This was old school, wear some shoe leather out kind of a detective work. And, you know, it was about that time I realized that, you know, my dad was not a guy who cared about material possessions per se, but he just cared about other people and helping other people. And obviously at some point became a cop so he could stop some of this madness, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, that was one of those crimes where I finally got what he did, even more than just,
right.
You know, there's another time he had locked up a rare book thief, and this guy had warrants out in like three or four states. He would steal books and he'd have to rebind them, and then he would resell them. But the thing about that is that you have to know about literature, number one, so you have to be very educated. Then you have to know about rebinding books, and you have to know what the buyer's market is and to sell that book. So this guy worked probably about 60-70 hours a week. And, you know, a guy had a
just
Rolex.
Researching old school.
Stealing books. He would steal books. He would steal this literature of antiquities that he would then sell to buyers, but he would steal them out of libraries and such. And my old man wound up catching him. He locked him up. In fact, the next day, I remember Sunday, he wound up bringing a bunch of New York Times and books and stuff down for the guy to read. I said, why are you bringing the guy whose papers, you know, he robbed people? And he goes, yeah, but, you know, it's, you know, I think my dad on some level respected this kind of intelligent, victimless crime. So, I growing up, and plus when you grow up with, you know, dad as a cop, you get to see crime scene photos on the kitchen table, you know what people are capable of. It gives you kind of an insight into, an invaluable education for sure.
And it was weird, you know, stand-up comedy's got nothing to do with police detecting, but you always said that your parents, they nowadays they're retired and they volunteer at the Walnut Street Theater, so they kind of appreciate the arts in that way. How they took it fine when you wanted to do stand-up?
Well, you know what, man? I was always I was always into it, man. I was always a funny kid. I mean, I grew up with six brothers, so we're always kind of like, you know, goofing off and stuff. I was the only one in my family that kind of went in that direction. I think that they didn't understand it at first, but certainly now they do. And I'm sure that any parent, look, I ain't hurting nobody. In fact, I'm probably doing the exact opposite, making people laugh. I'm doing a good job at it. I do it at a high level. And I think at some level they got to respect that. Mm-hmm. And also that it makes me happy, which I'm sure is all they really care about, is that I am happy and pursuing my goals and my dreams.
Awesome. Well, your podcast, The Jimmy Schubert Show, it's like a family affair. You always got cousins calling in. You had my nephew calls in.
I have my mom called in. My brother John calls in. Yeah, I wanted. Well, everybody was doing it, so I wanted. You know, what do I have that other people? I have a big family, and they're all funny, and I kind of encourage them to call in, and we do straight interviews, and we kind of sit around, and we riff with other comedians. It's kind of a homey mm-hmm. little podcast. I'm just trying to, you know, I talk to other comedians and writers and authors and other people that are trying to live their dream or trying to get to that dream. And there's many facets of that. I don't think people quite understand the difficulties of trying to get to a position in your life where you're able to attain that or make a living doing something you love to do, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, you ever seen that City Slickers and, you know, because it's that one thing. It's that one thing you got to figure out. It's that one thing. And they never tell you what that one thing is. And I think what he's trying to say is if you can figure out what you would do for free and you can figure out how to make a living doing it, then really, you never work a day in your life. Just last year, there were 75,000 new podcasts added to the internet. Now, then you got to go, hey, does, you know, what I say is different? No, but it's something else.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from being a stand-up comic, which is really an act, I'm a very normal person. I love doing what I love to do, but it certainly doesn't make me...
It's like, it is a bizarre form of, like, social mastery, you know?
Well, it's like golf. I mean, it never ends. You never stop learning. Mm-hmm. You never stop learning. It's, you know, you never stop writing. It's always, you know, you're always writing and trying to figure out bits. You're always trying to talk about stuff that bothers you. It's almost like kind of an... You know, you're studying the human condition. You're doing it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of variables going into the equation anyway.
Yeah.
So, but I like doing it, and I still think I'm relevant, and I still think I'm, you know, a great comic, so I do it, you know.
Yeah, man. You got a special out, Alive and Kicking. It starts with a short film, and then, you know, it goes into your stand-up. But it was the short film was directed by a guy called Michael
Callio. Well, you know, here's what happened. I wrote it. We put it together. The idea was is that I had this idea for an opening that I thought was great,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, kind of opens up with a funeral and it's based on the, you know, dying is easy, comedy is hard. So we did that, and the idea I had, I needed somebody who knew how to get shots, who had to execute. I mean. And I wrote it.
I think that's great. Like, you're not a control freak, you know. You're like, hey, look, I know what I'm good at.
And Mike did a great job with it. You know, we wound up getting it. It was edited by my buddy Claude Shires. I mean, I had a lot of help with it. And I had, you know, Billy Gardell's in it from Mike and Molly, Gary Valentine from mm-hmm. the King Queens, and Joey Diaz is in it from Grudge Match and Longest Yard and some other people. So I had some of my successful friends come out and were willing to give me a couple days of their time and work with it and put it together. And I thought it turned out really good. I thought it's a really interesting way to open a comedy special. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. It's another way of being funny. And those guys murdered it. And then you follow it with a 1 hour special.
I think it's great. Like,
I wrote it and produced it and edited it myself with the help of some friends. I mean, I literally, from the ground up, that's mm-hmm. my idea. That I was able to execute, and the overall goal, what I was trying to do was produce an hour of quality television, and I was trying to produce my own idea, and, you know, it's I had this great thing. It was a conversation between Seinfeld and Letterman, and when Seinfeld was doing Seinfeld, he said, I'd rather be, you know, I'd rather fail doing something I love to do than be successful doing something I hated, and that was my idea, my concept. And it was a big thing for me. I wanted to see it through. We typed an hour special in the back of it. I had to shoot the special 3 times because it wasn't what I wanted. I finally got what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to turn it out. And finally, after spending a significant amount of my own money to do it, and now it's, you know, it's up on iTunes. People can get it at Jimmy Schubert. Or, you know, it's got a bonus CD in it and some other stuff. So, yeah, it was a labor of love. It took me about 2 years. But I got it done, and it proved to me that I could do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, now I'm very involved in... you know, I just got a Panasonic Lumix GH2. I do a lot of videotaping, a lot of shooting. I want to start to shoot my own project, develop my own projects. I mean, that's where it's going. I think it's just not enough to be a great stand-up comedian anymore. You have to be a master of your social media. You have to be a master of the schmooze. You have to be able to work your angles. And I think it's just, you know, it's just not enough to be a great comedian anymore.
Talking about master of the schmooze, on my way over here, I was hearing Don Barris has a podcast, and he was talking to Ari Shaffir, and they were talking about you, and they said that you were always really good when you were palling around with Sam Kinison in the 70s, you know. Every time you would hit a new club, you would make sure to be friends with the club owner, because you're like, yeah, hey, you know, I'm going to be back here, and, you know, people talk about your networking.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I start with Dom. I mean, Don Barris and those guys, and I was just in New York. And look, I've always, you know, I mean, the great thing about this is that you're lucky enough to, you know, be able to make a living doing something and love to do, and then you're also able to meet, like, you know, great friends that mm-hmm. you respect, that they respect you, and even some people from afar that you don't know watch your career and kind of, you know, like what you do, and you know, you kind of hold yourself to a higher standard. I mean, look, the business is. It's already so tough as it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never felt I needed to go out of my way to make somebody feel like less than or a piece of shit. In fact, I always go the other direction because there's plenty of people out there that are willing to do the other thing, and I'm just not. I just don't see the point in it. You know, it's not in my character. I'm not that guy. I mean, maybe I should be a little more of a dick. I'd probably be further along in my career, but I'm just not. It's not in my makeup. You know, I just, you know, I live and let live. I don't judge people. It's not my fucking job. People can do what they want to do, and all I do is mind my own business, work on my bits, work on my craft, and try to stay booked, and kind of fill my schedule with kind of cool moments, like I'm getting ready to go to Hong Kong and Shanghai and perform in China, which I did last year. I just was in Shanghai and Beijing. I've never been to Hong Kong.
Actually, but I was talking to Tom Rhodes. He was on my podcast. He was talking about going to China. Was he the first one that kind of trailblazed that in your circle?
You know, Tom has always been kind of a world traveler.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I kind of tore a page out of his playbook, and I went to Israel, and then I went to Mexico, and then I went, you know, I've been to South Korea, I've been to Ireland, I've been to, you know, Afghanistan doing shows for the military, mm-hmm. You know, and for me, trying to find this perfect work-life balance is that, I mean, I could go to fucking Detroit for the 9th time, or I could go to Cleveland again. But, you know, for me, it's like about now. It's about having passport stamps. It's about having a life experience. And I want to do all that shit now while I can, you know? I mean, I want to be going to visit the Great Wall in China in a fucking wheelchair. I want to be able to kind of live a little bit.
Hey, you want to talk about some news stories?
Sure. What do you got, man?
We doggy treats.
Yeah, well, it's just a matter of time. I mean,
they already had puppy pros.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, I have to tell you, nothing incenses me more. Nothing, you know, I got my dog seeing a psychiatrist. I mean, people are bending down, picking up dog shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, which, while I get it, you know, because I don't want to have to navigate
pet sidekicks,
dogs. I mean, I live in a neighborhood. Caesar, the dog whisperer, lives in my neighborhood. I always see him walking. Okay, I mean, I think, you know, like, man's best friend has become, like, man's best friend, you know, or you're watching a news story where some fucking crazy widow left her entire life's fortune to two Rottweilers who sit in these matching leather recliner chairs, and, you know, and are, you know, anything can lick his own balls shouldn't be wearing a sweater. I mean, if you're walking a dog in a baby carriage, I'm going to punch you in the fucking throat. I think you're a fucking retard. Okay, this is an animal who in a while will be sleeping inside a bear carcass, okay?
Yeah.
I'm tired of these people traveling with their therapy cats and my fucking therapy dog. It's the only thing will hang out with you because you're such a fucking asshole. No human would hang out with you, so you spoil these fucking animals. They're animals. Mm-hmm. There's doggy diabetes. There's cat diabetes. There's cat AIDS. You spoil these fucking animals.
If a dog gets diabetes, if it starts getting all shaky, put it down. Dude, what are you going to give it a shot every hour?
The medicine costs $900 a month. You fucking, you know, injecting the dog or the cat every freaking... You know, I can't go out. I gotta get my cat a shot. You know, like, holy shit.
This guy was confessed to smuggling piranhas into New York City. He owned a fish store, you know, in New York City. I guess he wasn't making that much money from tropical fish alone. Because people are like, these Wall Street guys go in there and they're like, I want to intimidate my, you know, competition when they walk into the door. So I want a thing of piranhas. That's illegal. Hey, man, if you can get me piranhas, I'll pay you a lot of money. So this guy, Joel Rakauer, got busted.
smuggling piranhas.
You know? Why is that? Why is
Well, you know, because here's the new attitude. You know, it's like it's that the new attitude is fuck everybody. All that counts is what you know. It's not the needs of the many, you know, don't outweigh the needs of the few. You know, we live in this. It's the exact opposite message of Star Trek. You know, and Spock was, you know, giving himself because that might, you know, but so I think that I think we live in that world now. Is that people less have a tendency to fuck it, fuck anybody else. All the can, and then that stuff like those boa constrictors in Florida Everglades, they're having a real problem with the boa constrictors now moving their way into gentrified neighborhoods, and then the snakes are eating the dogs' pets. They're finding snakes in people's toilets. I mean, these are, I mean, you don't realize what it does to your the ecosystem that we have set up. And next thing you know, you get the piranha who's spawning, and next thing you know, they're eating fish. They're basically in a lake, and you've crazed an ecological fucking disaster. I mean, even in Tahoe, they have Asian clams up there who have basically fucking invaded. They have to put down a tarp over them to keep them submerged because they ruin the ecosphere for other animals. So it's a, you know, people smuggling pets. It's a big fucking thing.
Speaking of Asian clams, are you planning on getting into?
Speaking of Asian clams, how's your girlfriend?
Yeah, what do you do on the road? What are the rules on the road?
There's no rules on the road. It's like Fight Club. We don't talk about Fight Club. What happens on the road stays on the road. It's like Vegas. I don't, you know. Look, I get crazy stories, but no one needs. Look, my life is my life. I mean, it's like a little bit of a like to keep fucking private because I'm always, you know, you're always out on stage, you're always out there, you're always accessible, you're always, you know, people always watching your shit. I like to see, I'm a private guy, really, to tell you the truth.
Oh, here's a weird thing. We're talking about the internet a lot. We're talking about, you know, the internet kind of isolates people because everyone can get, instead of going to a movie where everybody's going to see the same movie or things like that, now anyone can watch whatever they want, and you know what I mean, on the web. So people, it's kind of isolating people. But anyway, this woman in Korea makes $9,000 a month from eating in front of her webcam. Yeah, so it's like, and you know, lonely guys are like,
and you know why? Because they got all these lonely guys on the fucking internet. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's why porn is all over the place. I mean, you know, you have a lot of lonely people out there. And you have a lot of lonely people that don't have any social skills, which is why they're fucking lonely. Otherwise, you'd go to the bookstore, you'd get out there, you know, you'd go take a cooking class, you'd do something, you interact with other people. I mean, you know, look, a lot of people think, oh, the world's turned its back on me, but chances are you've turned your back on the world. You should get out there and engage with people and develop those social skills. I mean, that's really what's happening here, is that people's ability to make eye contact and discuss ideas and concepts is being denigrated by the fact that they don't have to do that in a face-to-face manner anymore. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of these passive-aggressive assholes on Facebook who just fucking like it's some kind of fucking therapy. Mm-hmm. And what they don't realize is that Facebook is this giant data mining operation. Yeah. As there's all kind of companies that are paying money for what your dossier says about you, about what you like, what you post, the pictures you post, where you check into. And people go, hey man, Big Brother's watching. Yeah, Big Brother's watching. All he's got to do is follow you on Facebook and Twitter. He knows every fucking goddamn thing about you. And I think some people, they don't have anything to say. You shouldn't be on Facebook. It's something you should use responsibly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you really, you know, you're not going to fucking just fucking have verbal diarrhea and go on these fucking rants on Facebook and hope you get 100 fucking likes. It's silly. It's the whole thing that fuels Facebook is envy. Everybody wants you to think they're living this fucking amazing life, and chances are their life is just as miserable as yours.
Nobody's
posting pictures from a funeral and shit on Facebook.
Or smoking crack in a shack. You know, that everyone's just like, oh, check out my, you know, it's a magazine of propaganda of how great the people's lives are.
Well, you know, we have lost. We've been complicit in giving up all our private data and giving up all our privacy. So we live in that world now. And you live in this world that where, you know, the identity theft, the people looking at your Facebook page, they get your information up there, they can find out what your address is, a couple clicks here, a couple clicks there, they search up, they can fucking open credit cards in your name now. I actually think you have to guard against that because, I don't want to be a total fucking Luddite here, but at some point, you know.
I don't know what that word means.
Well, it means that during the Industrial Revolution in Europe, a lot of people resisted the machines. They thought those machines was going to be the end of manual labor and all these things. And sure enough, it was. I mean, you look at now. You look at in a lot of, they have these robots that do all the moving of pallets of products and goods and services. They have little Amazon was talking about having drones. These drones deliver packages to your front fucking door and drop it off. I mean, you know, at a point, it's like progress was great. It's just gone on for too long now. I mean, they have a wearable book where you could feel the fucking character's emotions. And I'm going, yeah, you only could do that before if you actually read the fucking thing.
What's a wearable book? Like,
It's a new thing. It's like a fucking mood ring.
Like a Technicolor dream coat.
It's like a mood ring. It's like a Technicolor dream coat with a wearable book so you can feel the character's emotions. And who would fucking want to? You know what I mean? Look, I want to read the book. The thing that's great about books is you can wear it, and it's all based on interpretation. Mm. Whereas people now, you know, everybody wants fucking instant coffee. Nobody wants to wait for it. I mean, they want to brew a pot. They want instant. Everything's instant. Nobody has any attention span anymore. We can't even let the economy go through its normal cycles. We have to flush income in to make sure we don't feel the recession as much as we would. But I mean, it's natural cycles. You can't shortcut that shit. It's like a relationship. You can't be in love with somebody after 3 fucking months. You have to date them for an extended period of time. Because does anybody really know anybody? I mean, it's kind of, you know, I know you think the world's moving at that, but basically there's places in this world where you go where the world doesn't move like that. And people could give a fuck about their email. I mean, basically, I would say 90% of my shit I spend deleting emails because it's all fucking junk mail.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, and furthermore, I'd rather sit here and do this. I'd rather sit here and have a conversation with you, or sit across the table at a diner and have a conversation with some people and make a fucking human connection. I mean, that's the thing that's suffering is we no longer make a human connection with somebody. It's always, you know, it's texting. It's, you know, you take all the inflection of a human conversation out of it. And that's why text messages get misinterpreted or this gets misinterpreted because an email, and it's not like having a conversation with somebody where you go, oh, this is what they meant, because you know,
it seems like the work ethic of your dad of being a gumshoe fucking, you know, gets on the ground and talks to people and sees if they're lying and uses all those skills, you know, that's kind of what you're talking about.
Well, it's going to swing back that way eventually. I don't care what anybody says. I think people are just going to get tired of it. People are just get sick. People are already sick of Facebook anyway. They're already sick of Facebook. The fact that you can't post something without 12 people, 100 people fucking liking it, and another 200 people commenting on it. And it's like, just shut.
And
just
people get depressed if people don't get enough likes.
You know what? Who gives a fuck? I really, you know, none of this used to happen before. All you had to worry about was being funny, but now.
Yeah.
Now there's all this stuff that goes along with it, and I'm not sure I get it. Like, I don't get, you know, what the advantage is, really. I mean, I get it, because you have a direct line to your audience and your fans, and people like you, and people want to follow you, but that's the upside.
Is it taking away your private time?
No, because the appointments I make with myself are just as important as the appointments I make with other people.
Right.
So if I've made an appointment with myself to sit here and do a little meditation, get a workout in, and get my fucking mind right before I start my day, then that is as important to me as anything else I do in my life. You know, I'm all about, you know, exercising extreme self-care and taking care of myself. My world is chaotic. I mean, you know, I travel like a fucking lunatic. I travel all over the world, and
sounds fun, man. I mean, it is fun.
But it's also when I get my moments to fucking sit and fucking relax and have some time with myself. I enjoy it. I mean, it's part of it is finding that balance, because you know you're out there, you're by yourself, you're in a foreign country, you don't know that many people, but at the same time, you know, I want to be out there. You know, you got to learn to be your own best friend. You know, you can kind of, you got to tend to your own guard. You got to be happy yourself before you can make anybody else happy. So you have to be happy with who you are as a complete human being before you decide to hook that up with somebody else. So if that takes some people a little longer to figure out than it does, and that's just called experience. I mean, nobody's perfect. Everybody's trying to be perfect. There's no fucking perfect. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're a human being. You're perfect in all your imperfections. You know, that's it. You are perfect in all your imperfections. So, but I think people are like, should I be more like this one, or should I try to be like this person? It's like, no, fucking be who you authentically are. That is fucking more important than anything else, I think. Do what you want to do. Fucking find out what makes you happy, and then fucking make yourself happy. And don't make other people responsible for your happiness. Be who you think you want to be, you know, and fuck everybody else. It doesn't make a difference. You know, like, the time here really is so short. That, you know, you hope that you lived a life that took reasonable chances, that you lived a life that took risks to push your own frontiers, that, you know, you looked out for people that were less fortunate and took care of people that were like, you know, and you lived a life that was as a decent human being without letting all your, you know, you've done your own psychological hygiene and you didn't let that shit spill out of you and affect other people. Mm. And to me, it seems like, you know, manners or even just a little consideration goes a long way now, because those are the things, those skill sets as a human being, your communication skill sets, which...
You think the internet's eating that up?
Well, I just think it's easy. It's like, well, look at the online dating. I mean, You look at these profiles these people put out there. You go, there's no fucking way you're that person. There's no way you're that person and still single fucking 40. There's fucking no way, Mother Teresa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, you know, but everybody presents this version of themselves they think is
people's avatars.
But
are they going to plug?
So when I say Luddite, I mean, yeah, you have to be aware of it, be able to do it, because in 10 years, if you're not aware of technology, it'll be the equivalent of being illiterate. But I also think that you have to take time to develop those other skill sets. I don't think it can be all that. I think at some point you have to walk away. I mean, Facebook is a fucking online soul suck. Yeah. You know, that's all it is. I mean, I go on and I put my update, I scroll down my feed just to see, okay, boom, then I'm out. And then I don't go back into it. I mean, I'm not monitoring my Facebook page 24/7. I'm not doing any of that stuff. I mean, I'm out at the driving range, or I'm playing golf, or I'm out shooting pictures, or out shooting video. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm working on a new idea. I'm trying to, you know, produce something or figure something out, or I'm working
new special?
Yeah, I'm actually, we're real close. I just did David Tell's new, his uncensored, unfiltered show for Comedy Central. We shot it December 2nd in New York City at the Comedy Underground, which is a great little venue, small, intimate, the way it should be. And it was kind of, it's going to be a late night show. It's going to come out after 12 or 1. No, it's David Tell hosting a show, and he brings up three
love
comics.
David Tell.
Yeah, one of my favorite, Dude, kidding me. David Tell's one of the funniest dudes in the country.
I used to see him when I was like, my dad used to bring me to the Comedy Cellar, you know, and we would probably go like,
yeah, he's
once
one of those guys.
Hey,
David Tell's one of those guys that makes me laugh hard. Yeah. I mean, I watch his set.
Him and Norton.
Yeah, no question. Two very prolific comedians, and they're both from New York. And I love Jimmy Norton as well, but these guys are also setting a precedent that you have to constantly create new stuff And if you want to keep up, you got to do it, you know, but. But yeah, I mean, David Tell, Jimmy Norton, those guys make me laugh. When I watch their stand-up, I go, you know, those guys you watch, you go, fuck, I got to get back to writing. They inspire you. It's kind of a friendly competition, you know?
So what kind of show is this that you did?
It's David Tell host.
It's not a late night talk show.
No. He brings out three comics. It's kind of like it's almost like a comedy club situation where Dave comes out, hosts the show.
Oh, that's great.
His fans come out, and then he brings up three comics that do like 7 to 10 minutes a piece, depending on how they edit it.
Mm-hmm. But you were able to do Filthy and it's going to be on late night?
Yeah, well, within reason. I mean, you also knew that it's TV, so you didn't want to give them.
Did they kind of go through your stuff?
Yeah, of course they did. They always do. You have to write it up. I mean, that's part of being a pro, is you got to write it in 7 minutes verbatim. And the great thing about it is, too, is by writing it up, then you know exactly the set you're going to do. They can feed it into a teleprompter, and after you've done the set 15, 16, 20 times the way you exactly want to do it, then they can pump it through. So you know, you got to train for those things. I think you have to get ready and prepare for those things. I mean, it's like getting ready for an MMA fight or a heavyweight prize fight. You have to train for that. You have to be on your game. You have to be sharp. And, you know, because it's anything can happen. It's a live performance and they're filming it. So you want to be able to kind of set yourself up. If you do your preparation, I think you'll, it's like one of those things that you know, when the moment comes, you've done all the work. So it'll come out the way you want it to.
You were saying you did golf. Do you do any martial arts to
You know, I used to. I mean, I used to. I just kind of got away from it, man. You know,
I started going to the Muay Thai Academy of America.
Yeah.
And I got the shit kicked out of me the other day in sparring. So I'm still hobbling around. I threw a kick and my instructor blocked it with his elbow. So I'm like, ugh, I'm dying.
Yeah, well, you know...
But it's so fun.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, it all is fun. I mean, some people figure that's the great workout. That's how I want to work out. They do that. Some people go out and jump on the bike and go for a bike ride. Other people, you know, to each his own. There's a lot of different ways to get to
that. What style did you train at?
I studied as Jeet Kune Do. It was Muay Thai. It was a Muay Thai, Jeet Kune Do, and also Wing Chun, Kung Fu. And I studied with a guy named Rick Tucci, who runs the Prince Academy of Martial Arts. And, and Kali Eskrima stick fighting. And
you did stick fighting?
Yeah, I actually was a member. I was a, like an amateur kickboxer for the PKA Professional Karate Association. When before all the MMA stuff and while that stuff was getting started, I mean, you go in there and it was kickbox, and you know, you had to throw. So it was.
What was your record?
You know what? They were just amateur fights. I won my first match. Second match was a draw. Lost my. I had about 5 fights. You know, but
just, awesome.
Yeah, but it was. You know, it was. I've gotten away from it a little bit. You know, I came out here and decided to pursue. I mean, the problem with pursuing like something like stand up when you're getting started is you have to kind of immerse yourself. And I mean, mm-hmm. total immersion. And if you live it, breathe it, eat it, and sleep it, because you want to get better. So I took the same disciplines that applied to getting good at martial arts, and I just kind of shifted the focus over to stand-up, which is why I kind of, you know, I used to do magic, which is a discipline. I used to do martial arts as a discipline. Now I do stand-up comedy.
So I got another news story here. There's a National Museum of Iraq that actually opened up pretty recently. But they have an exhibit, and people are saying that it's proof of ancient aliens. Now, it's not a good photograph, but what do you think of that? Are you worried about ancient aliens? Do you hold these theories?
Really? Ancient aliens? Here's what I think.
It's like when you have cave doodles that kind of look like, ooh, a flying saucer.
Look, if you don't think that aliens have been interfering with our evolutions for thousands of years, then you're a fucking lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is no way. And there was a great book I read called The Day After Roswell, written by the Air Force, a lieutenant colonel who was an intelligence officer who was handed this file. He called the Roswell file, and some of the technologies they reverse engineer with that same spacecraft. I mean, you look at the cell phone. The cell phone is fucking alien technology.
Uh-huh.
It's alien technology. It was reverse engineered with that spacecraft that crashed in Roswell in 1947. It took us idiots 40 years to figure out how to make the microprocessor small enough to fit in the palm of our hand and push millions of pieces of information along these tiny silicone chips that were also reverse engineered with that same spacecraft. I mean, and we get our grubby little primate fingers on. We take pictures of our genitals and send it to each other.
Every time we get new alien technology, yeah, but what how I'm can saying, I put my dick in it?
Yeah, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's all, but that's where we're at. I mean,
do you think the aliens have high hopes for us when they give our, NSA officials this technology?
I think they've given up. It's like, you know, they go, well, aliens have stopped it. Yeah, they may use planet Earth as some, like, intergalactic rest area to stop and, like, take a piss out of the three cocks, you know, and they have three alien dicks or so. I don't, it's just like, it's like some kind of intergalactic rest area. You know, don't fucking interact, look, there's some very bright people on this planet, and there's some complete, absolute freaking morons. I mean, there's some people that are, you know, actually interfering with the progress of us as a species. Sure. It's so fucking stupid. I mean, the problem, what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do?
Do you think that they give us something like television or whatever, and then they're like, oh, this will be a great device. It'll enlighten everybody. It'll just be Harvard lectures all day.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's funny you say that, because I just can't. I cancel my cable. I mean, I got Apple TV. I listen to iTunes.
Hell yeah.
I listen to Apple. You go on my YouTube. It's all photography stuff and how. I mean, basically, I go to classes, watch these hour lectures on how to be a better photographer, how to take better video, how to. I mean, this for me. If I watch TV, it's a freaking learning tool. I mean, if I want to watch something, I'll pop in. I'm watching The Story of Film right now, which is this great documentary. It's in 16 parts. And it's about the evolution of film and the evolution of this technology. And I find that stuff fascinating. To me, I'd rather watch that shit.
My favorite thing to watch, I love documentaries about Scientology. Do you like that? Have you seen any of these things?
I'm no rocket Scientologist. but what I'm saying is... No, I some of that stuff creeps me the fuck out, because it just doesn't even register on my mind.
Yeah.
You know, look, I talk about aliens, but I also happen to be a believer in God. I have a very spiritual side to me, and probably more Celtic spirituality than anything. I was raised a Roman Catholic, but those old kind of those connections to the earth, mm-hmm. I don't believe all this, you know, you're going to burn in hell for the rest. You know, God didn't create me as this human being that'll maybe suffer for all eternity because I fucking committed a sin. I mean, you know, what I think the miracle is? Here's the miracle. The miracle is life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, failing to live the life you want to live, that's breaking a sacrament. That I don't think, you know, so if you live your life and pursue your dreams to make you happy and you don't hurt people and you make the world a better place for other people to live in, what's the downside?
Mm.
You know, what's the downside? I mean, you know.
So it seems like there's two things going on. And this is what keeps me up at night. It seems like the financial situation in America is completely unsustainable. But me and you also kind of believe that there's, ancient alien technology that is, you know, look, get the internal combustion engine's 100 years old. So isn't there a solution is already available, but it's in some underground bunker who anytime someone tries to explain to the world, hey, there's free energy technology, their brakes get cut out or their head explodes somehow in some horrible accident. Well, is that the dam that's going to break?
No, I think ignorance is bliss. If you don't know any of that stuff, then maybe you have an easier time sleeping at night. Yeah. But at the same time is you're in it, you're here. You know, fucking whatever, what it is. Look, I don't spend, you know, when I sleep, I don't have it. Look, there's nothing you can do about it at some point, you know. I mean, who's not having a fucking tough time? You know, 80% of the American households probably live paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. I mean, I bet you half these households are carrying probably $40,000, $50,000 in debt on top of their mortgage. So, I mean, that's the American dream is what we're talking about. You're talking about the American dream. Remember early in the podcast, we talked about a generation that was promised things. Mm-hmm. Well, this generation, I don't think they don't get to have it. You don't get to have the American dream. I mean, you know what the American dream for you is? They want you sitting on your couch. They want you eating Pizza Hut and Haagen-Dazs and washing down with Coca-Cola. Watch your big screen television with your high definition satellite signal and you text your voting over your iPhone 5C, over the AT&T network, and you vote for somebody else who has a dream because they can dance with a star, they can fucking sing. Some fucking D-list celebrity has come out of the fucking closet now to dance with a, you know, and this is what entertains fucking human beings. Duck Dynasty, any of these fucking shows. I mean, they're fucking train wrecks. It's almost like I watch it and go, oh, well, at least I'm not that fucking asshole. But I mean, that's what it is. I can't watch any of it. I find it deplorable. I mean, we're not working to the top of our intelligence here. We're catering to the fucking ignorant. I'm going to live my life. You know, you want to fucking believe all that? You want to, you know, I love the political arguments. That fucking, I love, oh, you know, this one's fucking, I go, look, they're all fucked. They're all fucked.
Yeah.
They're a bunch of crooked, shady motherfuckers. The only people they care about are themselves. They will fucking sell you out and screw their own moms for a nickel. They can't wait to throw their constituencies under the bus.
What's this with this Anthony Weiner guy? He keeps trying to get back into it.
Even though he's morally bankrupt, he has a lot to say. And the Democrats like him because he was a good fucking strong mouthpiece. But the fact that this guy is so blinded by his own ambition that he can't even sit down for a minute and stop and realize that there's something fucking seriously wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is a Jewish guy who is married to a Muslim woman. And in order for that to happen, I don't know if you understand the complications
right.
of all the fucking paperwork and all the stuff that's got to be done for a Jew to marry a Muslim. And the Clintons had to get involved, and she was assistant to Secretary of State Clinton, mm-hmm. and Bill Clinton got involved to help make this fucking thing happen. So you had to move heaven and earth to make this agreement. And this is what the guy does to her. This is a guy, this is the thing, this is a guy who entered into a sacrament under the eyes of God and Judea law. You're getting married and committing your life to another person. Not a contract more serious, you know what I mean, than that one. Till death do us part forever and ever and ever. In the meantime, this guy's out, can't take enough pictures of it, can't get caught in enough fucking sex scandals.
Yeah.
I mean, look, man, I mean, you get caught. And go the fuck away.
Here's the beauty of comedy and people like Jim Norton and stuff. You know, he does all these filthy things. He has a horrible whore addiction. You know, he talks about it, but he talks about it openly, and he's not married. So if someone like that ran for office, I'd vote for him because of the honesty.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, honesty is the commodity now, right. in which is like, you know, look, I mean, you look at Barack Obama, hope and change. I mean, people voted him in and made us look very progressive as a country. We have our first African-American president. He was a marvelous communicator, very much like Reagan in that way. He's a great communicator. Problem is, not so much of a doer. I think he got in over his head. I think a lot of promises he made, he didn't. And I think it's gotten to the point where people don't even listen to him anymore. You're lying so much to me. I don't know what to fucking believe with you anymore. And in fact, you've done it enough times now that I don't know that I care. I just know you're a fucking liar. Mm-hmm. And first off, you insult my intelligence. Like, I don't know enough to know what's going on. Now, granted, I don't have the privy that he has. I'm not the fucking president. I don't know where everything is going on. But I know that, you know, under this administration, I mean, a lot of fucking middle-class businesses, I've seen the businesses go under. A lot of people are really fucking struggling. And you said you were the one that was supposed to help them and give them middle-class tax breaks. Then you pass this, you know, health care reform thing. I mean, look, and this, and people wind up paying more money now, not more money. And a lot of people's policies are getting canceled. So you represented this thing. This is your baby. You fucking gift-wrapped it and put it under the Christmas tree on Christmas morning. And you come out, and it's like a bright, shiny, expensive toy that shatters before it's ever out of the fucking box.
Yeah.
And you couldn't even, you had 3 years, you had $600 million to build a fucking website. To build a fucking website. So why do I think the Republicans are the answer? No. Do I think the Democrats are the answer? No. Do I think the system's broken? Yes. So until you fucking care enough to fix a system that's broken, that keeps fucking selling people out and selling people out and selling people out because we can't maintain it. You know, and they're all, I mean, you know, look, if America goes under, everybody goes under. I mean, we're kind of like, you know, we are a nation of consumers, and we buy the global goods and drive the global economy, and they've taken, now see, America has taken a lot of these jobs and kind of promised the rest of the world about middle-class America, so they got to give a couple of those manufacturing jobs to those people. Meanwhile, people in this country that had those jobs no longer have those jobs, and what do? So it's like the third world nation of America. You know, they want to turn it into this third world country. Oh, you know, now we're all even. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Abraham Lincoln said it best. You can't make a weak man strong by making a strong man weak. And I, like in China, I was in China last year, and it could be the most capitalist place I've ever been in my life. And I didn't think it would be like that. I didn't know I thought I'm going to a communist country. It'd be interesting. And it was very capitalistic. Being, you know, but the problem is what happens is when you do that and you bring this, our special blend of imperialism that we export, our movies, our chocolates, our candy, and, you know, and then you realize it. And the thing is that what happens is it Americanizes those cultures. Mm-hmm. And so that now you're stuck with that. But I mean, you know, it's complex. I mean, we're not going to solve it in this fucking hour podcast that we're doing, but certainly, you know.
Do you have like a dude?
So what you're saying is, I think in summation, let's put it this way: in this fucking crazy mixed up world with all this shit, you have to figure out what makes you happy. And I think in there is everybody's got to figure it out for themselves. You know, is it marriage or is it this or is it that or is it this or is it that? You know,
do comics have like a certain like hypervigilance that makes them like put like. That rant that you just went on, I think that you're echoing the same thing that a lot of comedians come to, especially that kind of your political views and stuff like that. It's like this hypervigilance where we just like carry the weight of the world on our shoulders because we see all this bullshit. Like, you know, in a comedy club, people have, you know, you have to know when someone's bullshitting you or, you know, it's like the social mastery. Well, so when we see people public speaking and lying, you know, we've seen that in the club every night.
Well, no, well, the thing is, I think that you've done the education, you've done the real work, and you've researched your topic, and now you can research it a million different ways with the internet. I mean, then you know what's going on. I mean, we live in a world now,
yeah.
And you've seen it like Tiger Woods come up against the internet with his cheating on his wife, and these 19 women come forward. I mean, you're coming up against, it's a different world now. I mean, you know, I don't give a fuck what Tiger Woods does. He's the one who got married and had two kids with this woman and was living like we still single. That's on him. That's not me. I don't give a fuck. You think it's important. I don't. I don't give a fuck if Bill Clinton got a fucking blowjob in the Oval Office. I think you ought to have a woman up there that comes in there and fucking sucks off the president when the fucking job gets stressful. Gay marriage? Do I give a fuck about gay marriage? Fuck no. I don't give a fuck about gay marriage. I don't care. I'm, you know, socially I'm very kind of liberal, but it's like, okay, so you vote, put the gay marriage on the ballot, it gets voted down. And it gets voted down again. And what people don't realize, they think, oh, all these homophobes. No, it was the African-American community. The African-American community does not like gay people. Mm-hmm. There's guys that are married in the African-American community, or on the DL, they call it, and they have sex with other men while they're married to their wives with two kids. I mean, I think Oprah did a whole fucking special on it as well.
Right.
It's a whole...
It's culturally acceptable if you're ashamed of it. and you do it on
well, no, but what you'll never hear is, what you'll never hear in the mainstream media is that the reason that it did not pass on the Los Angeles fucking ballot right. is because the African-American community came out in droves to elect Barack Obama, but simultaneously, they also voted no on gay marriage. And, you know, people go, you know, you get mad at the wrong person. And that's exactly what the fuck happened. So we and I'm sorry.
We should be mad at the blacks.
Well, not that you're mad at the blacks, but you would think of people that have been persecuted for so long themselves would yeah. certainly be open to the fact that, you know, but they don't like, you know, homosexuals in the gay in the black community. They just don't like it. That's just neither here nor there. That's just what fucking happened. Now, how do I say that? How do I spin that without pissing everybody off? How do I spin it without pissing the gays off, getting the blacks pissed off at the gays, and the gays, and because everybody's in the hurt feelings business now. Wow. I just got my feelings hurt. I want them to apologize. You're being silly. You're being a fucking child.
Yeah.
You know, you're a goddamn American,
and
man.
Like,
we beat the Japanese and the fucking Germans. That's how fucking much we kicked ass. But we've gone from the greatest generation now to fucking therapy cats and ball deodorant. That's where the fuck we're at, man. It's fucking sad, actually. It's you know, it's the pussification of America and the emasculation of men. Mm. I mean, these are themes in my show that I do, but I do them for a reason. You know? I mean, fucking peanut allergies. For God's sakes, I mean, these kids are going to school and shooting other kids in school. I'm going, you know, 3 out of 7 kids have a fucking peanut allergy. You don't got to bring a gun to school. Bring a fucking jar of peanut butter, open it, and fucking lob it into the cafeteria like a grenade and watch these little motherfuckers go scurry for their EpiPens. You know, I mean, you're talking about, I didn't know anybody with a peanut allergy. Now it's 3 in 7 kids.
Yeah.
If I couldn't eat peanut butter as a kid, I would have fucking starved to death. Okay? So, I mean, you fuck with the food supply. And that's the other thing. I just watched Food Incorporated, and I did this on my last podcast. If people want to go to Jimmy Schubert Show and listen, you can hear it. But it's about how they fuck with the food supply. Like, you buy tomato seeds. You grow some tomatoes. You think, I can take the seeds out of the tomatoes and grow a new batch of tomatoes. No. They've genetically modified the fucking seeds of the tomatoes that don't reproduce. So you have to go back to that same company and buy more fucking seeds. Really? It's a fucking tomato.
Yeah.
Who told you to do that?
Yeah.
You don't get to fuck with the food. They fuck with the food so bad, the kids can't even eat a fucking goddamn peanut butter and jelly sandwich, which was soul food when I was a kid. How do you fuck up a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? The kid, you know, anyway, the point is that there's not that, but there's corn
and
the GMOs.
Patents have historically been for advances in technology that improve something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't get to patent a fucking seed or a strain of a seed that was already here. Who the fuck do you think you are? And see, now these guys throw money in politicians' pockets like Barack Obama signed a fucking bill. Bought and fucking paid for. It's wrong. You can take a piece of GMO corn, put it beside a piece of regular corn, and the squirrels with their tiny little fucking heads and their minuscule pencil eraser fucking brains know not to eat that shit. But you feed it to your kids, and you got to wonder why there's the rates of autism there are now. Why 1 in 85 kids is born with autism. I'll tell you what it is. It's the fucking food. It's not vaccinations. It's the food. You're fucking with the food. The fucking food. Growing corn and making ethanol out of it. Growing food for fuel. Which, by the way, ethanol isn't even the best fucking crop. It's sugarcane is the best thing to make fucking ethanol out of. They give all these farmers these corn subsidies.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, and I think gay marriage and this stuff that really doesn't make a difference. I think all that stuff is pumped out the funnel, the 24/7 news cycle. They just feed that to you. Mm-hmm. They just feed that to you. So they got that on your brain. You don't have time to stop and think about everything else.
It's a smoke grenade.
That's why you got the childhood epidemic of obesity. That's why you got a childhood diabetes. That's why you have epidemics of obesity in adults. That's why you have heart disease and fucking all kinds. That's sick. Sick, and I'll tell you why. It's the fucking food. So listen, part of your responsibility as a human being, God made this wonderful, amazing fucking human being, which is you. And he's taken this amazing marvel of the human body, and he's kind of turns you over to yourself, which is, you know.
You're on a paleo diet.
Do a little paleo.
A little paleo
here and there. Yeah, I try to eat healthy, man. I cook. I love to fucking cook, man. I'm almost chef like. Some of my stuff is. I mean, I think it's the most. I mean, after going on a rant about food, but I think it's the most important thing that you can teach your child is how to prepare their own food, how to pick the right food and prepare their own food. That I think, will become really important as we go down the as you go down the line. Because, I mean, you know, there's no nutritional value in a fucking Hot Pocket. And I, you know, I love Mondays, Tuesdays. I'll cook. I'll put the food in. I'll prepare. I'll lay out. I got fucking 5 or 6 meals already. All I got to do is pipe them in the microwave and go about my business.
Mm-hmm. So
sorry, it's your podcast, bro. You should probably say a couple things. I'm sorry. I can want ranch. Oh,
well, Plato said that, you know, every 7 years, your every cell in your body's replaced. So where do you think those come from? The food.
Yeah.
Anyway, Paula Ozuna sees Jesus in a toe bruise. You know, people, they bruise their toe, and then she wrapped it in, right after she stubbed her toe, she wrapped it in gauze and dirt. She took dirt,
yeah,
which is so seems medically unsound. And then she saw the face of Jesus in a bruise.
You would be surprised. You'd be surprised at what you think would what you put on a wound. I mean, apparently, I mean that's part of the problem. Is antibacterial. So people go. I mean, your body's equipped to do that naturally. It's like washing your hair. You need some of those oils from your hair. You don't wash that stuff out. You wash it. You know, simple things. People put all these compounds on their face,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, fucking the goddamn makeup. All the chemicals and makeup. I mean, lipstick itself is a petroleum-based product. And the average one will go 6 through 6 pounds of lipstick in her fucking lifetime. Not to mention the chemicals and the makeup they put on, the hairspray. I mean, a lot of that stuff is probably causing a lot of the cancers that people get, you know, mm-hmm. in their bodies, you know.
You're fired up about the world, man.
Not really. I mean, you know, I'm a simple dude. I'm a simple dude. I mean, I know all this stuff, but I choose to be happy is what I choose.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously, I have a passion for what I'm talking about. And when I attack these subjects on stage, I do have a passion for it. I believe that you have to have a passion for what you're saying. If you don't think what you're saying is important, how do you expect a room full of 400 strangers to think what you're saying is important?
How do you make everything, like, you know, educate, but also with
comedy. Well, you got to do a lot of things. You got to work to the top of your intelligence. You have to read the newspaper. You have to know what you're talking about. I always said one of the greatest writing exercises: read the newspaper cover to cover for a month straight. And not only will you be able very well informed in your stand up, but you'll also be very well informed about the world. You'll be able to talk about the Sunnis and the Shiites, and you'll know what's going on.
What newspaper isn't owned by Alphabet?
Well, you got to go to BBC Americas to read their stories because they don't have a dog in the fight. But you know, if you're reading the Washington Post, you're reading the New York Times, you're reading the Los Angeles Times. I mean, traditionally these are very liberal papers. I mean, you read the Wall Street Journal; it has a little bit of a right slant or a business slant on it. So you know, you can't just read one; you got to read a couple. You got to know what the fuck's going on. You got to know how. I mean, especially if you're talking about something you want to represent an alternate point of view that you don't have, you should really kind of look at it from that perspective. You know, I mean, I'm just in a business where it's incredibly competitive. It's also incredibly competitive to come up with original thoughts and put the originality in the presentation. And you should know what the fuck you're talking about. You should be able to talk about what you're talking about in great detail, because you're going to come across people in the audience who don't agree with you. And the goal is to make everybody laugh. Is how do I make you laugh? How do I make you think at the same time? How do I make you laugh and think at the same time? How do I make you laugh hard and think at the same time? How do I fucking do this at a very high level that I enjoy it as well? I mean, you know, there's a lot of variables thrown into the equation. So it's not just about saying funny things. You have to perform funny things.
Did your act evolve? Is it much different now than?
My act did evolve. I just did a podcast called The First Five with Eleanor Kerrigan, and I had my first 5 minutes on a videotape, which I let them put up on their Facebook page because it was so ridiculously. I mean, I'm 17. Yeah, I was lucky I started doing this early. I knew what I wanted to do, and I was lucky enough to get in early enough where it wasn't as competitive as it is now. And a lot of people get into this thinking it's going to be easy because it looks fucking easy. When you watch somebody who's good at it, when you watch a Jimmy Norton or a David Tell, they make it look so easy. They make it look so easy. But it's hard. It's one of the fucking toughest things you'll do.
For sure.
Because there's a lot of things out there that you don't have control over. And you could be the best comic out there and still not be getting the breaks you want. I mean, you got to go after that shit. You got to be a combination of fucking everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to be a combination of your social media and your combination of this. You got to be on it. You got to run it like a business, you know?
Vincent Wade crashes his car, gets naked, and plays with himself on the street in Philadelphia.
In my hometown.
Yeah, right in front of the Crown Fried Chicken.
Well, good for him, man. He figured he was getting locked up for DUI anyway. Might as well go for the full count.
What made this happen? Energy drinks? What's going on? Oh yeah, that's coming up.
No, there's a book you can read called "A Sociopath Who Lives Next Door," and I actually couldn't finish it because it was actually really scary. But they talk about it in the book.
They talk
about that. You know, you share apartment complexes, you work alongside people who have borderline personality disorder, or this disorder, or that disorder, and they're full functioning. Asperger's, whatever the deal is, and these people, turns out that, could have borderline sociopaths.
Yeah, they're CEOs.
But the CEOs, they're people you work next to. I mean, there's guys who run to a post office and fucking start shooting everybody.
Yeah.
Or schools that start shooting them. What the fuck? I mean, the kid's not even fully developed as a human being. You raised a sociopath by the time he's fucking 17. He runs to a goddamn cafeteria at a middle school with an AK-47. I mean, that's what you've done. That's what you've done. You fucked up your kids so bad. You didn't get you dropped the ball. Didn't give this kid enough fucking help him develop enough skill sets as a human being that he could figure some of this stuff out and weave his way into getting some help or getting fixed or doing some big work or reading a book or figure out that he's not the only motherfucker out there that feels like this. But he thinks he's isolated, yeah, all in his thing. And his only solution, the thing that bothers me, is that they think that that is the only solution. The only solution for me is to fucking then kill 7 people and then kill myself. And going, really, that's not the only solution. There's other solutions out there. But that kind of thing seems to be happening with more and more frequency.
It just seems like mental health especially is super, super expensive in this country, and not widely available.
No, but that's what I say. I say we have, we have a mental health problem in this country. This guy's is a gun control problem.
So what do you think? There's all these people, a lot of Brazilian women are selling their virginity online. I think it's kind of, depending on what your morals is, I don't really put sex with any kind of morality. If they want to do this thing and then have their whole college paid for one night instead of 20 years of whoring, what do you think?
I think it's a shortcut.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think nobody wants to do the work anymore. I mean, that's what you're going to do. You're going to sell your virginity, get some money, and that's going to solve how many problems? Like, money is the answer to your problems.
Katrina.
Well, it's like the chick that eats in front of the camera. I mean, it's fine. I mean, that's the world we live in now.
Yeah.
Am I buying into it? No. Am I going along with it? No. I mean, that's fine.
Does this story depress you?
How sad is it that that's all you think you have is to sell your virginity online and that's how you're going to make your fucking money?
Right.
I mean, come on, really? Why don't you fucking make the world a better place? It's just a goddamn vagina, lady. All right? And half the time I'd rather beat off and fucking dump my nut butter into a tissue of love than have to fucking deal with that, your psychotic behavior. That's fucking psychotic.
Well, a Japanese millionaire called Natsu offered
$1 million to make his daughter a fucking nun. I may actually investigate that deal while I'm over in Asia. She will give somebody $1 million to make his daughter heterosexual. He offered $1 million to make his daughter's a lesbian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the story you're talking about?
No. This guy called Natsu, a Japanese millionaire, was going to pay her $780,000. For her virginity. But anyway, talk about this story.
No, well, that's another story. There's a millionaire who wants to... the millionaire who has a lesbian daughter, and he's offered $1 million to any man who can fucking make her straight.
And that means raping her?
Well, who knows what it means in the Asian culture, brother? It means let her go to a bukkake festival and see how she works out that... She worked that out all.
That's immersion therapy.
Immersion therapy.
It's like on Maury, if you're scared of a pickle, then they just bring out a bunch of jars of pickles. If you're scared of the dick,
And fear is just,
Oh, yeah. King Henry VIII had... I was reading into... there was this Vice article about the history of the codpiece. And it kind of started as a... protection in medieval war. And then it developed to where King Henry VIII, he couldn't conceive. And he was worried that his disciples were like, he can't conceive. He's not a worthy, he can't have a son, he's not a worthy king. So he walked around everywhere with a metal erection on his armor that he would wear.
Yeah, after he kills you, he's going to use that fucking iron dildo to fucking gut your ass like a housing and urban development project under renewal.
You know, people...
Will strike fear into the heart of the enemy.
Oppressors used to walk around with a giant metal top.
That's
going,
why we
hey,
go
I'm
to war. That's why we go to war. And if my dick's bigger than your dick. No, it's not. Fuck you. Yeah, watch this. Here's my big giant missile shaped like a penis. You know, I mean, what the fuck? I mean, you know, war and sexuality and its impact on nuclear disarmament. I mean, you know, we can go into, yeah, I know. Are you looking
did you read
fun?
A book about nukes and...
No, but there was a lecture series in Beverly Hills that you could go to. I didn't want to go into it. I just found that it was fascinating that they would discuss, you know, sexuality and its impact.
That sounds like a very niche lecture.
It's very niche. Yeah, it's a very niche market. But, you know, I'm always for educating myself and moving forward. But I just thought that was a little too much for my own sensibilities. Anyway, the point is... I'm sorry, King. He also cut the fucking head off of 8 of his wives.
Yeah.
You know, so...
And a religion is
And it probably had something to do with the fact that he couldn't get a fucking heart on. Bitching, you ain't gonna say nothing to nobody about me and my fucking limp dick. But, I mean, look, every fourth commercial is a Viagra commercial. I mean, if you think there's, like, we're just a nation full of impotent men. If only my dick could get hard, I could... You know, what, really? I've never taken a Viagra. I don't need to take Viagra. Knock wood.
Yeah.
Never had a problem in that area in my life, nor do I ever fucking hope to. But I
certainly...
So, but, you know, and especially at my age, I'm not concerned with the fucking size. I just want the motherfucker still to work, you know what I'm
saying? Yeah. So it's the pool cord still.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just fires the pool cord. Yes, that's all you need, bro. That's all you need.
Let's talk about your dates. You got dates coming up. This guy got to air March 11th, so you're going to be at Flappers Comedy Club Burbank, March 21st, 22nd, and then you're going to Zany's in St. Charles, Illinois, the 26th, 27th, 28th. How is Zany's? Do you like that club?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do. I've been working for them for a long time. It's I feel part of like a family unit up there, and they take care of me, and they can run good clubs, and they're good people, and I like going up there to work for them. So, yeah. So, but that's the thing. It's like anything else. It's like any other industry. You know, you build relationships with people.
Yeah.
And you honor those relationships. And you have loyal relationships. And then, you know, and you don't wait till, you know, the club across the street gives me a couple extra $100 more and I want to fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
I always go, listen, here's what they're offering. I want to give you guys a chance to match it. Sometimes it's about money. Sometimes it ain't. Sometimes it's about... I'd rather go there and work for an organization like that that treats me the way they treat me, because that's what makes a difference to me. You know, like, you know, treat me like I'm a, you know, like it's the, you know, like it's a, like I'm fifth down your priority list of like, look, I'm in your club, I'm doing a show, you know. I just like to be treated with the same respect that I also.
You're a gentleman. Thank you so much for doing this podcast.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Can I ask you about one more thing? You were talking about, no, you kind of started your career going around with Sam Kinison at the Comedy Store, and you know, were you always good at you know, networking and keeping relations with club owners, or did you ever have crazy nights where, you know, yeah, destroyed a green room or anything like that? What was it like hanging on to wagon?
I never did, but he did. Yeah, it was about a 5-year period in my life where I went on a little bit of a. Little bit of a bender. I was living that lifestyle. It was, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I mean, at the highest level with, you know, all the fucking players from, you know, Slash and David Lee Roth and Stallone was hanging
out. What, you would high-five in orgies?
No, not that. You know, but I'm just saying you were in a position where, like, you would meet a lot of girls, and girls would come back after the show and they want to hang out with you. You used to their hometown theater with 5,000 people and rocked it, and I had long hair, and you know, I looked like, you know, it was like, I felt like I was a comedian, but I felt like I was in a rock band. We're traveling by tour bus. I'm going all over the country. It was absolutely amazing. I mean, you're flying by Learjet and flying into these gigs. And Sam was like one of the first comedians that was able to do that. And he was also a very influential comedian on a generation of the comedians coming up behind him, like he influenced me. But, I mean, I was a young kid, man. I was like, you know, like a good 7 years younger than Sam. I got to live that out firsthand and watch that whole experience and watch it and learn a lot. I mean, I learned a lot. I learned about what not to do. Certainly, if I had those opportunities in my life, I would never, ever, ever treat him like Sam did. I mean, Sam became successful, and usually successful, and he was a brilliant comedian, but he became successful despite himself.
Mm.
You know, despite himself. I mean, he just happened to be the perfect guy for the perfect time, and people really identified with him. But there was, you know, there was, I mean, there was that lifestyle that went with it. And, you know, Sam fancied himself kind of a rock and roller. So he lived that John Belushi, you know, that kind of mystic. I mean, you know,
Chris Farley.
I mean, you know, guys get caught up in that. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, I think you have to be in love with what you're doing. And if you can't get your shit together to do 45-minute sets a night and fucking, if you want to go have a couple drinks afterwards, that's fine. But, you know, do your job. Do mm-hmm. your job. And look, you can't make the party more than what the show is. And I think when you do that, you get lost. You get lost and you'll get chromatically lost.
What was the darkest time or the craziest thing that happened while you were
Just Vegas, you know. You're going up for 3 days. You're on a 3-day bender. No one's sleeping. I mean, you're doing shows at night. I mean, you're fucking out of your mind.
Just do gambling.
Full-on blackout.
Snorting.
Full-on blackout, bro. Full-on blackout.
Were you always wearing a suit looking good, though?
Yeah, of course I was. I'm
a classy fucking guy.
Yeah, I'm a classy fucking guy.
Walked into that casino. No,
but I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah. You're doing it you're doing it at a high level. I've always dressed up, though. I always think that, you know, you should, you know, you're getting paid for your professional point of view, so you should always kind of polish that up. Like, if what I'm saying is significant, then it will be even more so in a suit and a tie. I mean, I don't always wear suits and ties. I do for like big shows and corporate events or casinos, and some rooms dictate that you dress up or at least throw on a suit coat.
Yeah.
You know, so that like you actually, but I don't like guys who go up in t-shirts and lean against the wall and do all this fucking thing. It's like, you know, so.
Yeah, you're there to be a performer, be a professional. Hey, well, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure hanging out with you.
Oh, man, thanks for having me on your podcast.
Hey, for sure,
bro.
Yeah. You opened up, you got fired up. Anyway, that's another episode of the Highway Diary in the motherfucker bag. Thanks to my guest, Jimmy Schubert.
In the motherfucking bag, motherfucker. You gotta put the motherfucker on the motherfucking motherfucker.
Cool. Oh, click through my Amazon link on the RSS feed to the podcast. Check out my web series called Here Comes Godot. My other one called Damien Shadows. And, Theater of the Deranged is a DVD coming out of a short film anthology that I hosted as my character, Damien Shadows. That's coming out in March or later in the summer. Look out for that. Anyway, those are my plugs. Later.